Chapter 1. Dinner at the Buchanans. When I was younger and more vulnerable, my father gave me some interesting advice. Whenever you feel like criticizing anyone, he said, just remember that not everybody is as lucky as you are. That's all he said, but I know he meant a lot more. I am a reserved person like my father, and I understood him. I don't judge too quickly, although my tolerance of people does have its limits. Last autumn, I came back home from the East, and I wanted everybody to be morally perfect. I wanted no more partying, no more meeting people but never really knowing them. Only Gatsby, the central character of my story, escaped my demands. He was more successful, more sensitive, more hopeful than anyone I have ever met. He was all right in the end. The people around him were the ones who disgusted me. In this Midwestern city, my family has been important for 3 generations, and my father's hardware business was started by his great uncle back in the mid-19th century. People say that I looked like my distant relative, even though I never met him. After graduating from Yale in 1915, I served in the Great War. That experience made me restless, and so on my return I decided to learn the bond business, and my father agreed to finance me for 1 year. That's how, in the spring of 1922, I came east, permanently, I thought. I needed to find accommodation, so I was happy when a work colleague suggested we rent a house together in a nearby commuter town. Unfortunately, at the last minute, his company sent him to Washington, and so I went to this simple old bungalow alone. I had a dog for a few days, before he ran away, an old Dodge car, and a Finnish housekeeper. Then, one day, a man who was even more a newcomer than me asked for directions to West Egg Village. When I told him, I suddenly felt like a guide, a part of the neighbourhood. The sunshine made me feel my life was beginning again. I bought a lot of books on banking and started reading as much as I had in college, with the intention of becoming a well-rounded man again. I was renting in one of North America's strangest communities. Long Island extends east of New York, and around 20 miles from the city you find 2 unusual land formations, shaped like a pair of enormous eggs and separated by a small bay. I lived at the less fashionable West Egg, right at the end, 50 yards from the salt waters of Long Island Sound and sandwiched between 2 gigantic houses. The one on the right was like a French town hall, with a tower on one side, a marble swimming pool, and more than 40 acres of lawn and garden. This was Gatsby's mansion, but I didn't know him yet. From my own ugly house, I could see the Sound and a part of his lawn, and I also had the comfort of knowing that I was surrounded by millionaires, all for $80 a month. My acquaintance with the fashionable white palaces of East Egg began one summer evening when I drove there to have dinner with my distant cousin Daisy Buchanan and her husband Tom, whom I knew from college. Tom came from a wealthy Chicago family and had been a football hero at Yale. He and Daisy had lived in France for a year and had then come east for some unknown reason. Daisy said they were here to stay, but I didn't believe her. The reality was, I was going to have dinner with 2 old friends I hardly knew. Their house was a red and white Georgian colonial mansion, with a line of French windows overlooking the bay. Tom was dressed in riding clothes and was standing in the sunshine on the front porch. A sturdy man of 30, muscular, with an aggressive manner and a rough tenor voice. Although we had never been close friends, I think he had a good opinion of me and wanted me to like him. "I've got a nice place here," he said in a restless tone while pointing out the view to me. Then we went inside to a rosy-coloured drawing room where two young women sat at either end of an enormous couch. I didn't know the younger one, but Daisy tried to get up and then laughed as I came hesitantly into the room.
"I'm paralyzed with happiness," she cried,
holding my hand and looking into my face. She murmured the name Baker to indicate the other girl, who nodded at me, and then she started to ask me questions. She looked sad and lovely, and there was excitement in her voice. When I told her I had spent a day in Chicago on my way east and had met a dozen people who sent their love to her, she asked,
"Do they miss me?"
"The whole town is desolate," I replied.
"How wonderful! Let's go back tomorrow, Tom."
Then she said abruptly,
"You should see my baby, but she's asleep. She's 3 years old."
Meanwhile, Tom, who still seemed restless, put his hand on my shoulder and asked me what I was doing. "I'm a bond man," I replied. When I told him the name of the company, he just said, "Never heard of them." I was annoyed at that. "You will, if you stay in the East." Tom looked at Daisy and said confidently, "Oh, I'll stay in the East. I'd be foolish to live anywhere else." Miss Baker said,
"Absolutely,"
and then yawned and stood up.
"I'm stiff from lying so long on that sofa," she complained.
"Well, I've been trying to persuade you all afternoon to come with us to New York," said Daisy.
As cocktails arrived, Miss Baker added,
"No, thanks. I'm in training."
"Really?" cried Tom in amazement. "I don't know how you managed to do anything." I looked at Miss Baker. She was slim, and she stood like a young cadet. Her grey eyes looked back at me politely, and I saw that she was not a happy person. I enjoyed looking at her, and I was sure that I knew her from somewhere.
"You live in West Egg," she said in a superior tone. "I know somebody there."
"I don't know any," I started to say.
"You must know Gatsby."
"Gatsby?" asked Daisy urgently.
"What Gatsby?"
I was about to say that he was my neighbour when dinner was announced. Tom took my arm and led me out of the room, while Daisy and Miss Baker walked calmly outside onto the porch, where four candles flickered on a table in the wind. Daisy put them out and said,
"It'll be the longest day of the year in 2 weeks' time."
"We should plan something," said Miss Baker in a bored tone.
Daisy turned to me.
"What do people plan?" she asked.
But before I could answer, she showed us her little finger.
"Look, I hurt it."
We all looked at her knuckle, which was black and blue.
"You did it, Tom," she said accusingly.
"I know you didn't mean to do it, but you did do it. That's the price I pay for marrying a brute of a man. A big, hulking, physical..."
"I hate the word hulking," interrupted Tom angrily,
"even if you are joking."
"Hulking,"
repeated Daisy. During dinner, Daisy and Miss Baker sometimes talked at the same time. It was always conversation without meaning, relaxed and with no passion. I realized that they were here simply to entertain or be entertained.
"I feel uncivilized in your company, Daisy," I told my cousin during my second glass of wine.
"Can't you talk about crops or something?"
"Civilization is collapsing," Tom shouted. "I've become very pessimistic."
"Tom reads books with long words in them," added Daisy sadly,
and Tom looked at her impatiently. The telephone rang inside the house, and when the butler came outside and whispered in Tom's ear, Tom frowned and left the table. When he had gone, Daisy leaned forward.
"I love to see you at my table, Nick. You remind me of a rose. Doesn't he?"
She turned to Miss Baker for confirmation. Then, suddenly, she threw her napkin down and went into the house. Before I could speak, Miss Baker said, "Shh," and tried to hear the murmuring inside.
"This Mr. Gatsby you mentioned is my neighbour," I started to say.
"Don't talk. I want to hear what happens."
"Is something happening?" I asked innocently.
"Don't you know?"
Miss Baker said with surprise.
"I thought everybody knew. Tom's got a woman in New York, and she doesn't even respect his privacy at dinner time."
At that moment, Tom and Daisy returned to the table.
"Sorry about that," cried Daisy,
with a kind of tense joy in her voice.
"Isn't it romantic outside, Tom?"
"Very."
Then the telephone rang again, startling everybody, and Daisy shook her head at Tom. I can't remember much of the last 5 minutes at the dinner table, only that the candles were lit for a second time, and none of us looked directly at each other. All topics of conversation vanished into thin air. Tom and Miss Baker strolled back into the library, and I followed Daisy to the porch at the front of the house. We sat down on a wicker settee. Daisy held her face in her hands. I asked her about her little girl to try to calm her turbulent emotions. Suddenly she said,
"We are cousins, but we don't know each other very well, Nick. You didn't come to my wedding."
"I wasn't back from the war."
"That's true."
Then, after a hesitation,
"I've had a bad time, Nick, and I'm quite cynical about everything."
There was an awkward silence, and I returned to the subject of her daughter.
"Nick," she said, "would you like to know what I said when she was born?"
"Very much."
Tom was away, God knows where, and the baby was less than an hour old. I asked the nurse whether it was a boy or a girl, and she said it was a girl. I cried. Then I said, "Well, I'm glad it's a girl, and I hope she'll be a fool. That's the best thing a girl can be in this world, a beautiful little fool." Now you understand how I feel about things, Nick.
She finished with a mocking laugh.
"God, I'm sophisticated."
And at that moment, I felt her insincerity. Inside the house, Tom and Miss Baker sat at either end of a long couch. Miss Baker was reading aloud from a magazine, but she stopped when Daisy and I came in. She stood up and announced that she was going to bed.
"Jordan's playing in the golf tournament at Westchester tomorrow,"
Daisy said.
"Oh, you're Jordan Baker," I exclaimed.
I remembered seeing her picture in various places. I had also heard an unpleasant story about her, but that was a long time ago and I had forgotten the details.
"Good night," said Miss Baker. "See you again, Mr. Carraway."
"Of course you will,"
interrupted Daisy.
"In fact, I think I'll arrange a marriage. Come and visit us often, Nick, and I'll throw you two together."
"Good night," called Miss Baker from the stairs. "I haven't heard a word."
"She's a nice girl," said Tom afterwards.
Daisy added, "Nick's going to look after her, aren't you, Nick? She's going to spend lots of weekends out here this summer."
"Is she from New York?" I asked.
"From Louisville," Daisy replied. "We spent our white girlhood together there."
Suddenly, Tom demanded, "Daisy, did you have an intimate talk with Nick on the veranda?"
"Did I?"
Daisy looked at me.
"I can't seem to remember," I started to say.
After a few minutes, I got up to go home. Tom and Daisy came to the front door and stood side by side in the light. I started my motor, and Daisy called out,
"Wait, I forgot to ask you something important, Nick.
we heard that you were engaged to a girl out west.
I denied it instantly. I was involved with somebody, it was true, but unwelcome gossip was one reason why I had come east. I drove home confused and a little disgusted by Tom and Daisy. When I arrived, I sat for a while in the yard. The night was bright, there were plenty of birds in the trees, and the frogs sang. Suddenly, I realized that I wasn't alone. 50 feet away, a figure had appeared from the shadow of my neighbor's mansion. He was standing with his hands in his pockets, looking up at the stars. Something in the relaxed and confident way he stood on the lawn suggested to me that this was Mr. Gatsby himself. He had come outside to determine his share of the night sky. I decided to call to him, but suddenly he made a movement which told me that he was happy to be alone. He stretched out his arms towards the dark water of the Sound, and I think he was trembling. I looked towards the sea and saw nothing but a small, single green light far away, the end of a dock, perhaps. I looked back once more towards Gatsby, but he had gone, and I was alone again in the unquiet darkness.